With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got you covered with comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting and confident looks you can count on. For over a decade, Mack Weldon has designed timeless, innovative menswear to help you move through the day with confidence. Not flashy, just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MAC25. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code MAC25.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit TRE.radio.
TRE in the afternoon, presented by Hannah Murray.
Good afternoon. It's just coming up to 10 past five and you are listening to Women Talk. And you really are listening to Women Talk today because two of them haven't arrived. So it's just me and Victoria. Hi, Victoria.
Hello, Hannah. Thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for coming, genuinely.
Not a problem at all. It's a pleasure to be here. I did try to bring two of my friends, but it's just that little bit too late notice.
I know, absolutely. So, yeah. Yes, we don't need to go into details why the other two ladies aren't here, but it's just us. So we're going to be talking lots, which shouldn't be a problem.
Let's just hope people don't get sick of the sound of my voice and my ums.
Never. No, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. There's a piece about soup. I always like to talk about food. And there's one here about soup, soup of the day. And there was like a poll where people were talking about their favourite soups. And I could tell by the names of some of the soups mentioned here that they were soups that they'd got from a tin. I felt like they were branded soups from a tin. There's no need for that, Victoria, is there?
I really have to be in the mood for soup from a tin. And actually, you know, I don't think I ever have soup from a tin. If anything, it's, you know, like the Waitrose ones in those Waitrose. I've not seen a Waitrose for years now, in the plastic pots. They're more palatable for me.
Okay, right, yeah.
A tomato sauce in a tin, I'm so sorry. I know that I'm probably going to be offending quite a few people here, but I'm a bit like, ooh.
Yeah, I mean, I used to love that. We won't say brands, but I used to love that tomato soup. It was like years ago, it was kind of a nice sort of go-to, easy comfort food. But over the years, the last time I tried it a good few years ago, it's so sugary. I mean, we talk about the hidden sugars. It's full of it. And you don't need sugar in soup.
And let's just think for a moment. One of the reasons people, well, soup is, I suppose, a convenience meal and maybe a more affordable meal. But a lot of people nowadays, I believe, in the last 10 to 15 years, choose soup because they want to take the healthy option.
Yeah.
All the preservatives that are in certain tins. I mean, look, if they're living on a shelf for years and years and years, then how much, there's going to be calories and energy there, which is great, but the live polyphenols, antioxidants, are just not in that soup, are they?
No, definitely not. And it's so easy to make a soup yourself. And one of the big things we are lucky living here in Spain is the abundance of fresh fruit and vegetables and local vegetables and things like that. And you can take all of that and make a soup, and you can make it with whatever you like. You know, all your favourite vegetables, you can put in some potato, you can put in some cheese. You know, it doesn't have to be green, it doesn't have to scare people that it's like too healthy with no flavor. I mean soup is just, I love soup. I'm obsessed with soup, to be honest.
Well, I love soup too. I'm waiting for the day I can finally start wearing long sleeves, and then the soup season comes in, and there is one soup that I mean sometimes I'm making like three or four times a week, and my partner still tells me he's not sick of it.
That's a good sign.
Here's another point. What's the difference? You know, where do we draw the line between a soup and a stew? How much do you judge it up, you know?
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Whether you leave bits in it or not.
Exactly. I'm a bits girl. I like a chunky soup.
Yeah, definitely. We actually had soup for our dinner last night.
Oh.
My husband made cabbage soup because we've just been to Romania, and we had loads of soup and loads of cabbage, so we thought we'd combine the two.
Hang on a minute. When you say cabbage soup, like what, just cabbage? What's in with this? What did PJ put in?
I mean, great question. I wasn't there during the cooking process, but from a tasting point of view, I know he put in that Korean paste, the kimchi. No, gochujang, I think it's called. It's a red, comes in a red jar, and it's a Korean paste. It's a bit spicy, full of flavour. Oh. And there was also five spice in it, which was really, really nice. So it had a kind of Chinese Korean flavour to it with loads of chunks of cabbage.
That sounds amazing. Was that the type of soup you were having in Romania, or was this a different? Because I know that your partner, like your husband, likes to make Asian-inspired dishes, right?
Yeah, absolutely. In Romania, there were two different soups that we had. He had the goulash, a Romanian goulash, once with beef and once with pork. I had like a it was a smoked pork, so it was smoked pork and potato, and I mean, so delicious.
I went for Polish once.
Yeah,
this is like 20 years ago, and it was probably the best meal I've ever had.
Really?
And the only reason I've not gone back to having it was because it was so stodgy, but it was so delicious that I didn't even feel guilty or uncomfortable with my physical discomfort. We had gormki.
I don't know what that is.
Anyone who is listening to this who can pronounce gormki correctly, then please correct me, and please hope I didn't hurt your ears too much. But it's so it's cabbage wrapped. So it's a you know, like vine leaves, for example. So.
Yeah.
But in Poland, and I know there's lots of different ways people make it, but the one I had, and actually, so I don't eat red meat or pork, but at the time it was minced beef, minced pork, and maybe chicken, I can't remember, inside cabbage leaves with some sort of gravy on top. And it was the most delicious, comforting thing I have ever eaten. And I think I had a soup to start.
We literally did the same. That's the other dish we had, the stuffed cabbage leaves. We had that twice in Romania. Sounds exactly how you described it. It's obviously like an Eastern European thing. And yeah, it was delicious. We bought the cabbage straight away, and he's blanched some cabbage leaves. So on Saturday night, we're going to have stuffed cabbage leaves, literally making it all.
And it's so good for you. Like, you know, when does anyone say, oh, you know what, I fancy a bit of cabbage when I get home? I do.
Yeah, definitely. We're weird. So yeah, no to tin soup, yes to making it your own.
Especially when it's so easy. You just chuck it. Well, if you get your husband to do it, it's super easy.
Yeah. But no, with like tomatoes and peppers and all that kind of carrots, leeks. I mean, there's so many, all with their own unique flavour. And you can put curry in it, or you can put some coconut milk in it. And oh, yeah, soup.
I like to sauté onions. Like oyster saute mushrooms. I just saute mushrooms, and then I'll put like crisp them a little bit and put them on top as a dressing.
Oh, nice.
So I suppose, you know, when you talk about soup, what kind of soup are you talking about, really?
Special ones, special soup. According to us. It isn't, oh no, well, this was the other day, so I'm not sure how many sleeps it is till Christmas, because I can't remember what day's paper I cut this out of, but it says 91 sleeps left. Is it about that?
I'm going to check.
Okay.
Now, I love Christmas. I really do. When I get there, I'm not prepared for it. Not really planned what to eat, what to wear, etc. And then I'm kind of a bit like, I'm over it before it's really started.
Mm.
But I'm definitely not a counter of the days down to Christmas.
Well, this article is talking about how unbelievably prepared some people are. And people have been going shopping already in the likes of John Lewis and buying Christmas baubles and Christmas decorations and things like that. And I thought it was just an interesting topic to look at, how prepared, you've sort of answered already, how prepared or not we are for Christmas. Do you buy Christmas presents during the year, or do you go at the end of November, I better start thinking about it?
Definitely towards the end of November, I would start thinking about it. If I think of an idea 6 months ahead, I'll buy it straight away.
Okay,
it's the same for birthdays for me.
Yeah.
I try to think of things as far in advance as I can and get them, because if I don't, literally, it's not 91 days before Christmas. It is the day before Christmas, and I still can't think of the perfect present to buy for my partner.
Then it becomes stressful, doesn't it? And expensive if you're buying for multiple people all in the same month. And I mean, I couldn't do that.
No, and who wants to buy a present for someone just for the sake of buying a present? Like, you want to get it right, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I have a two-year-old daughter, so I think she's going to be 2.5 for Christmas this year, and it's a lot easier choosing for children, right? Because their face is going to light up no matter what.
Definitely.
But can we just talk about the price of Christmas trees? Or am I a bit of a Scrooge?
Oh, they're expensive, aren't they? Well, even fake ones, you mean? Or do you mean fake ones?
Yeah, fake one. I think real ones, maybe we'll get a real one this year, because you might as well get a nice real... I don't know, but for the last several years, I used to travel a lot, so I wouldn't bother getting a Christmas tree, because I'd see it for half a day and then have to put it away again. To me, it would just be kind of more of a... taking up space.
Yeah.
But no, I would like to get a Christmas tree this year, and it's a lot of money to get a Christmas tree.
Really?
I think maybe I'm looking the wrong places in Marbella.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I bought one years ago and like a fake one and keep using it.
And you roll them out. Maybe that's what we'll have to do.
Definitely. We always had a real one at home when I was growing up, which was lovely. It was planted in the garden. So it came out every year. My parents would dig it up and bring it in the house. It wasn't massive. About a metre and a half high, maybe.
I have a question for you then, and I'll explain why I'm asking this question. Your Christmas tree, was it full-bodied or was it a little bit, like, were there only a few sprigs? Because we nearly bought one from the garden centre the other day, but it was just so... There are only a few sprigs on it.
I wouldn't describe it as full-bodied, no. There was more than a few. Yeah, there was plenty of place to hang the baubles and stuff. But no, it wasn't the things you see in American movies.
No, this little Christmas tree, pine tree that we saw in the garden centre 2 weeks ago. We planned on getting it. And then I got there and I went, do you know what, Dan? Looks like a stick man.
Oh, no. Yeah, see, that's not what you want, is it?
No.
No, definitely not.
So it's 77 days to Christmas, so there's still some time.
77. See, what I do, which I think works really well, is I have a list on my phone of potential presents for everyone who I buy presents for. So if I'm having a conversation with someone and they go, oh, I've always wanted that, I'll sort of turn away and add it to the list. And then when it comes to their birthday or Christmas, however many, it could be that they've just had their birthday, but I'll write it down. So when it comes to Christmas or their next birthday, I'll look at the list and go, oh yeah, she said she wanted a book on such and such. So then I'll get it.
You are an amazing friend to have. Like, I thought I wrote lists. So I would write lists of people's names and put my ideas on, and still the day before the day I should be getting a present, unless I didn't think of something perfect 6 months ahead.
Yeah.
I'm stressing out because I can't think of the right thing.
Keep a list. It's called presents, my list. It's a present list. And I also have a list for myself.
Yeah, make it easy for everybody else.
Yeah, when I think of things I want, I write it down. So if anyone ever says to me, is there anything you want? Well, yes, I can think of a few things.
Have you ever taken it online, like the Amazon gift list, wish list, Hannah Murray?
I haven't
actually. Just refer them to the gift list.
I'd feel really bad about it. It's like a wedding list, but without the wedding.
Or maybe it doesn't need to be Amazon. Make it whatever other, you know.
Yeah, all other stores are available. Yeah. But no, I think a bit of planning is good because so many people talk about Christmas being stressful and it shouldn't be. It's supposed to be a really lovely day. And I think the more you kind of plan, the less stressful it is, whether it's planning the food, organising and wrapping all the presents and, you know, deciding what you're going to wear, making sure you've got all the food and drink that you need in the house, whatever it might be. The idea is that you wake up on Christmas Day. If you're involved in cooking the food, then obviously you're doing that from pretty early on. But otherwise, whether you're cooking the food or not, little glass of something, put on the Christmas tunes and it should be a nice kind of family friendly day.
I agree with you. And yet, from my perspective, I'm so in my head in the run up to it. Like, oh, what have I forgotten? What have I not done? Because I've not planned anything ahead, apart from trying to think of presents, that it kind of comes and goes. And all I'm doing is worrying about getting something right.
Well, but I do like Christmas. This year's going to be less stressful and more enjoyable.
Well, we've got Father Christmas coming to our house this year.
Oh, how lovely.
Thank you. Yeah, very excited.
That's kind of him to get that in when he's so busy.
I know he does do all of the children, but he's definitely coming this year. We've had it confirmed.
Oh, nice. Is she excited? Does she not know?
So we're still on Halloween.
Right, okay, yeah.
We haven't. She mentions Christmas, Chris, she calls it.
Chris.
And she says it every time she sees Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn come on for that Christmas Chronicles film. Or we went to that Smurf village in Huzgar. Have you been there over the weekend?
Oh, yes, it's great, isn't
it? We really enjoyed it. And all these gnomes are in the window, so she's shouting out Chris to anything with a white beard.
Right.
So, we're not, the bar's not higher for the Father Christmas that turns up in December. As long as he's got a white beard, she won't mind.
Fine. Oh, I love that. There was a piece that I thought, you know, all these trigger warnings that we hear about a lot now, and some of them I think make perfect sense. I definitely think there's a place for them, but some of them I think are a bit kind of over the top, a bit snowflakey. And this I thought was unbelievable. The new owner of the 007 film franchise has removed guns and girls from its digital posters of classic James Bond films. Now, Sean Connery, Roger Moore, Pierce Brosnan and Daniel Craig no longer wield... Oh, my earring's just fallen out. No longer wield Bond's trademark wall, the PPK. So there's a picture of Pierce Brosnan here with his hand up that should have a gun in it, but the gun is taken out.
I thought about this and quite quickly I thought, you know, whatever the... Is it the owner, did you say, of the franchise? Maybe he just wanted to minimise his headache because so many people seem to have opinions. He thought, I'll just take it out. But I agree with you. I do think it's a shame that someone has felt that they've had to revert back and remove things in order not to cause offence. And there are plenty of films that plenty of other people would disagree with fervently. Mm. But obviously Bond, you know, the Bond series, it's so high profile that maybe more fingers point there.
I mean, there's guns all over in the film.
Exactly.
That's the point. That's why it's on the poster, because it's relevant and he's a secret agent and him posing with the gun is one of the iconic symbols of the whole film franchise. I mean, it's just bizarre.
And I grew up watching Bonds, you know, maybe even if it's only parts of each film from a very young age, and I knew it wasn't real.
Yeah.
And it's an iconic series.
Absolutely.
Films, and it's based on the books. What, are they going to take certain words out of the books now?
Get rid of the martinis because it'll offend people who are teetotal.
Well, didn't we get rid of the martinis in the first place because they had a deal for whatever beer brand?
No, are you serious?
Okay, someone listening is going to know exactly what happened, but I remember one of the Daniel Craig movies, the martini, the shaken but not shaken, not stirred.
Yeah.
Shaken, not stirred. I'm claiming that I used to watch them, kind of remember the phrase, was removed. And then you see Daniel Craig with a bottle of beer. I can't even remember which bottle it was.
Oh, my goodness.
And that was a deal. So, you know, I tell you what, I suppose it depends on who's funding.
Yeah, selling out. All comes down to money, doesn't it?
Sadly.
Yes, we better take a break. Look, see, we're chatting away.
Oh,
it's
we're having
good.
A whale nearly, of a time.
We're nearly halfway through. Look at us.
Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Welcome back to Women Talk. It's just gone 25 past five. And with me in the studio today is Victoria Adams. Just Victoria Adams. It's just the two of us. We could write a song.
Yeah, we could. I feel like we're changing the world with everything we're talking about. We've discussed soup, haven't we?
Let's big
Bond.
Ourselves up.
Yes.
Yep. Life changes right here. World changes everything. There's an article talking about behind-the-wheel habits that drive other road users crazy. I'm feeling like there's a lot we could say on this. Number one is tailgating, which, apart from it being really annoying, is really dangerous.
I'm shocked. I mean, look, we live in Marbella. There's bad driving everywhere, but some of the behaviours on the road I see here, just considering we've just more or less got one straight road.
Yeah.
It's shocking.
It really is. People who are right up behind you tailgating, and then when they undertake in order to get in front of you, or you see them doing it with other cars, and they just about make it, and you're like, oh, that's so dangerous. And a lot of the time when someone's tailgating, you can't actually go any further. It's not that you're hogging the left-hand lane and you've got all this space in front of you and you're just deciding not to go that fast. Often there's loads of cars in front, so you can't actually go any faster because you're not tailgating the person in front of you. You're keeping a respectful distance.
But you know what I've seen happen often? You can see then the person tailgating can see, you know, there's cars straight ahead. There's nowhere to go. And yet it still works. They get through and they get through and they get through. With a lot of effort, though. I mean, I don't know how much time they're saving. But then there's the person that is going slow on the road and you're like, stop behind them. I mean, it's fascinating. My partner drives mostly and I watch the behaviours of people on the roads and they've got their head in their phone.
Oh,
like their head is
so
truly
bad.
In their phone. There's reading directions, but I don't know what these people are doing.
No. There's no excuse for it. There really isn't. I've seen people holding their phones in one hand and holding the wheel with the other, and they're like texting. And
it is a texting face, isn't it? You can see they're texting. And I do believe, you know, the work that a lot of people do out here, their work is on WhatsApp and they're driving in and out of appointments. And so I suppose they have no option. They're going to lose their client or they're going to lose that sale if they don't.
I mean, it's illegal for a start. They're not supposed to do it, are they?
Well, but this is the thing. For the person that's driving with the phone in their hands, it's only illegal until they get caught and they realise, and then that moment. But for as long as you're just getting away with it, I don't think people have that realisation that, oh my God, this is really dangerous. Or, unless an accident happens, they get caught, then they get in trouble. They're the two times it counts.
I just feel like you can kind of tell it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. If you're going any kind of speed, you need to concentrate. Yeah. And, I'm sure we've all might have experienced from time to time the need to press that. I mean, I have hands free, and people should have hands free. That's kind of why it was invented. So you should never need to pick up your phone whilst you're driving. And the fact that you're not allowed to is the obviously biggest issue with that. You're not supposed to. But, you know, if you've got, whatever, the sat nav thing, and so if you've got the radio on there, the podcast on there, phones, all that kind of stuff. So sometimes you need to press something if you're pressing play or you're pressing call or whatever. And sometimes even that, if it's not working, within the space of half a second, you realise that you're not properly concentrating on the road because you're trying to press a button. That's how easy it is to happen, and I just can't see how someone could think that texting is not distracting to driving. It's shocking.
I think people are so in their own minds, and I do. I've read data where they do generalize female drivers to male drivers, and I know the way I drive. Like, I'll get to the end of a journey and think, and I'm concentrating on the road, but I'm also thinking about things, whatever it is, the shopping list or something more serious, or if I'm about to teach a class, and I think, oh my God, was I actually in the car? Because you kind of forget the route you've just done.
So easy to be an autopilot.
Into that.
Yeah.
Very easy. Whereas I do believe, and I see my partner drive, men look at the road, they're with the road, they're present to the road.
Yeah.
Maybe that's, you know, I don't know, I'm going to generalise again. Maybe that's why a lot of people who tailgate are so present to the road, they want to get on with it and continue and push ahead. But no, I've seen some really dangerous driving in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Shocking.
And one other thing, the third thing on the list is no indication.
Which
is incredibly annoying when you're, it happens to me all the time, it happened this morning, when I'm sitting on a roundabout ready to join the roundabout. And if people are coming off the turning before you, if they're indicating to come off, you know you have a window to get onto the roundabout. And if they're not indicating, you assume they keep going, so you can't go onto the roundabout.
Had this exact conversation this morning.
Really?
Yes.
And then they come off the roundabout without indicating, and you're like, I could have gone.
That was my moment, and I didn't
know. Exactly. You could have just given me the moment.
But also, what about on the roundabouts? On the roundabouts here, when you're on the roundabout, and, okay, so you want to turn off, but then there's someone in the outside lane that should be turning off because they're positioned to do that, and they just keep going round the roundabouts.
Well,
and that's the way it's done here. Like, they are the rules, apparently.
I have to say, I learnt to drive here, and that was really interesting. And all my friends said to me, ask them about roundabouts, will you? And how the roundabouts work here. It is very different to the UK. And I had three different driving instructors, I think. Not because it took me a long time, but because for different reasons. And they all said, if I were you, just stick to the outside lane all the time.
I have found myself in the outside lane on a couple of occasions as well.
It really is the safest way of doing
it. Yeah, but I indicate.
Yeah, absolutely. I indicate that I'm going round and I indicate when I'm coming off. But whenever I go in the not every time, but most of the time when I go in the inside lane, there could be a bit of an issue. As soon as you're trying to come out, because you're only supposed to come out of the inside lane into the right lane to come off if it's safe to do so. If there's a car on the outside, you have to keep going round until there isn't a car on the outside, safe enough. That's what you're supposed to do, but nobody does that. If you're in the inside lane, people just start indicating, and in the outside lane, you either go quicker and they have to wait, or you slow down to let them. I mean, it's quite dangerous.
It does feel a little bit like driving out here, a hybrid between wacky races and bumper cars, doesn't it? You know, like, ooh.
Exactly.
And you're just like, you know, and then you get to where you need to go. You're like, oh, okay, whew, got rid. And then you get back in the car again and you go again.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And probably exactly the same with the people that have got their phones in front of their face.
Oh,
it's nuts.
No, it really is. This is an interesting piece. Women are increasingly leaving loved ones at home when they go on holiday so they can explore on their own terms. Travel firms reported a noticeable increase in demand, particularly from women travelling without family or friends as they don't want to wait for dates or holiday dreams to align.
Well, I do retreats, so I meet a lot of women that come on their solo trips. And actually, part of me is a little bit sad when two friends come together or actually the partners come together because they don't get to experience their holiday on their own terms.
Mm. So it's nice seeing people coming away on their own.
Yeah, if they need that break, and most, like we do, we all need that break, right? Mm. Hopefully they'll still enjoy their time together and go on other holidays together. They don't do everything separately. I actually went away for the first time in 3 years to run a retreat for a week last month and left my partner at home with a baby, and he had the best holiday ever.
Really?
Oh. Yes, and I've come back. My daughter no longer breastfeeds. She sleeps in her own bed on her own 99% of the time.
Wow.
I highly encourage solo trips. Yeah, if you're in a relationship, if you're in a stable relationship where you can be apart and that's not an issue, and I don't know how many relationships, you know, the percentage of relationships there are that are like that.
Yeah, some people couldn't.
Yeah.
There'd be a lot of insecurity issues and jealousy issues and all kinds of things that could get in the way of people doing that. Some people wouldn't like it at all.
No, no. And for other people, you know, one can go away, do what they want, and the other person can stay at home and do exactly what they want.
Nice. And how did you find it first time being away?
Oh, I was really not nervous, but I was thinking, overthinking everything, over worrying everything. There would have been no way I would have gone had my partner not been kicking me out of the door or kicking me to say yes on the email.
You need that encouragement and know that he's okay holding the fort.
Exactly. And I know he's okay holding the fort because he does so much anyway. Oh. I forget most things. He's always reminding me. You know, he really is my rock and my support, and we're grounded. So it's fine to be separate.
Oh, lovely. But it was nice to come home, I bet.
It was lovely to come home. It really was. Yeah. Especially coming home to a full night's sleep for the first time in 2.5 years.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. I can't believe that all happened while you were away.
I know. It's amazing what a 12-volt battery will do. That's what he says. And I'm starting to believe his joke. You know that.
Brilliant. We better take another break. Oh, goodness.
Hannah Murray. TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Women Talk with Victoria Adams. Just the two of us today. There's an article here talking about some of the reasons why people go on holiday. And I found this fascinating. So we've had workations, baby moons and coolcations. But it seems our holidays could be based on even more obscure trends next year. Interest in food has sparked the shelf discovery trend. This is where travellers seek out authentic supermarkets abroad. I mean,
which supermarkets are they going? Are they buying the things or just having a look?
I mean, it's weird. I like going on holiday for food. Like, we'll research restaurants and stuff like that, but not supermarkets.
Do you think they book a self-catering or they bring all the produce back with them?
Oh, maybe.
You can't do that depending on which country you're coming to, do you? Can you?
Another increasingly popular fad is Glow Mad, in which travellers take part in in-flight beauty routines and shop for local beauty products.
So I get paid to do that.
Yeah.
The in-flight beauty routine is super popular now. Like,
what
some
is it?
Skincare brands are actually putting educational content together. And also, you've got to bear in mind, certain brands are sold in airports, and some of their biggest earnings are from these airports. So if they've got an in-flight package or in-flight routine that people can follow, and what can you really do on the plane? And some people love to record it. It's sort of the perfect storm for sales. But obviously flying, your skin can get puffy, you can get a lot of inflammation. I always get a spot crop up on the plane.
Really?
And we dehydrate. So ideally, if you can do something for your skin before, during, and even after flying is really helpful. not just your skin, like your whole body.
So you would do this then on a plane, be putting creams and things on your face?
I have done it, but I don't always do it.
Okay.
I mean, I haven't flown properly for the last couple of years. I think I've had 2 or 3 flights, whereas in the past, I was always trying to do something. I used to sit there and do exercises using facial tools like a gua sha or using my hands, just massaging and trying to decrease the puffiness, move the lymph around. But the most important thing to do on a plane would be to drink water.
Yeah.
I mean, I do know some people that won't even eat when they're flying.
Really?
Because I can't remember the reasoning behind it. He would take a load of spirulina or chlorella capsules and then nil by mouth, even on a long-term flight. I'll try and find the name of the guy. And then when you get back on ground, something to do with the cellular uptake in the body. And you can feel very tired and dehydrated. Like if you're flying long haul and you want to minimize your jet lag, they say start eating in the time zone you're going to. And often it means like you can't eat anything on the plane. And if you're flying business class or, you know, there's some lovely food and snacks, that's a killer, isn't it?
Oh, gosh.
But the K-beauty is huge now. People are...
Yes.
The store's just opened up, actually.
I know. I haven't been, but my friends told me about it. I'm really looking forward to going to see it. I'm already using some Korean toner on my face, and I like the feel of it.
Have you tried the snail trail one?
No.
Well, that you can buy it. You can try it. And this is the great thing. There's all these different products, and most of them are Korean beauty, and they're on TikTok or whatever social media, and people are just buying them straight away. And I know if you're in the UK or London or some big city, there's going to be plenty of places where you can try before you buy. But I'm so excited about this shop next to El Campo. You can go in and see everything.
Wow.
And they're super, are super hydrating.
For people who don't know and understand why it's such a big deal, because obviously you know about this stuff, why is Korean beauty skincare supposedly such a good thing?
Well, that's a really good question. I believe it's suddenly become popular because it's sort of in the last 5 or so years, it's almost come out of nowhere, like K-pop, the Korean pop music. It's always been around, but now all of a sudden the West are more open to it. And in Asia, you know, they're obsessed with longevity, obsessed with beauty. And so the technology that has gone into that, is it superior? Don't know, but I'm sure it can be proved. But all of these new brands that are coming in is a taste that, you know, globally outside of Asia, some people haven't had before. Another thing is, I've just drawn a complete blank. complete blank. Over to you, Hannah, for a moment.
What about price? I was going to say, aren't they generally a lot cheaper? I mean, I expect through the years the prices are going to go up and up as the demand increases, but...
There are some more expensive brands. I mean, there are hundreds and hundreds of brands. Oh, this is what I was going to mention. Do you know that LG owns 100 beauty and skincare brands? LG, the television and the technology company. Yes. Yes. So LG are Korean and they have all of these baby companies underneath them in beauty and skincare. Is that a good thing? I mean, the amount of research and technology that goes into their computers, hopefully they do the same with skincare.
Yeah.
Hopefully they do it in the right way.
You'd think. Well, I'm excited to check out this new place and...
So no more excuses for a holiday to South Korea. Just go to El Campo.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, exciting. This I thought was interesting. It may seem like just another chore, but watering office plants for 15 minutes a day may reduce stress and anxiety in a similar way to Valium.
Well, anything to take your mind off work must be a little bit more relaxing than work, mustn't it?
Yeah. I must say, I've really got into... watering plants. I mean, we don't actually have any in the office, so I don't do it here. But at home, I've through the years, it's been a standard joke about me, you know, buying plants and then just watching them die, kind of thing.
That's where I'm at.
Okay. Well, eventually, something kicks in that makes you go, no, this is, I'm taking pride in my garden and my plants, and I enjoy doing it. I literally, every 2 days, roughly, I water all the plants and the grass and everything, and I really enjoy it.
I keep buying these pots of herbs because I have this thing, when we live in Spain and we can have a balcony with all these herbs and I can put them in my soup.
Herbs are difficult.
Well, they are. The herbs are dying. Every 3 months, I buy a new thing from this garden centre where we've seen what could have been our... Christmas tree in need of a spruce, and I think what it is I say to my partner, let's buy it, it's only £3, come on, and I'm asking him because really I want to have it, but I want him to take care of it.
Right, yes, I get you there.
Anyway, we've got this really dehydrated rosemary plant on the side.
Yeah. I mean, rosemary is one of the hardiest, yeah. But yeah, if it's not green anymore. But mint is a good one. So I've got a box and I got mint, basil and coriander and parsley all in the same one. They all died except for the mint, and the mint has taken over the whole box now.
So you must be having some lovely drinks at night time then.
It's great. But I tell you what I like, mint in salads.
Same. Fresh mint with mint. Watermelon and feta.
Oh yes, that's the best salad. That's yes. And chili and cucumber.
Oh, I've never tried that. Actually, maybe a long time. Right, I'm going to try that this weekend. We're actually doing a parasites cleanse at the moment. So,
That in the paper. What's a parasites cleanse?
So it's said that many of us could be living with parasites in our system and we don't even know it. And
that's such a horrible thought.
I know it is.
Made me go itchy.
Well, I'd rather... that's exactly what's been happening to me. The more... Because I'm seeing it on social media all the time and I've tried lots of different things like liver flushes and liver cleanses. I work on retreats. I've done all sorts of fasts, but I hadn't tried the parasite cleanse. So I finally bought all these herbs and I haven't followed anyone's protocol because a lot of people are just selling their own product.
Right. Yeah, you have to be careful with these things, don't you?
And you can do it naturally with whole foods rather than cutting anything out necessarily. Pumpkin seeds are great. What else? Clove, flax seeds, papaya seeds. I don't really like papaya. I couldn't tell you about the seeds. But we've just bought some herbs. So clove, wormwood. One will attack the adult parasite and the other one will go for the eggs, for example. And black walnuts. There's loads of different ways you can take it, as tablets, in powder, in tinctures, Mimosa pudica. Please do your own research and speak to a doctor before you do this, but then you have to cut out certain food groups as well. Mm. So we're not eating any fruit except for berries occasionally, which is really difficult for me.
Yeah.
I love figs, especially this time of year.
Oh, yeah, figs are lovely this time of year. So how long is this lasting for?
We've just been discussing that because we did plan to do it for 7 to 10 days. But we've been reading recently, some people just do it for 3. I think really I'm just getting a little bit fed up and a little bit hungry and I want to go for fish and chips tomorrow.
Yeah, you need to find an article that tells you to do that this is the advice they're giving now.
Break your fast with fish and chips and go and get your ice cream. No, so a watermelon salad would be a better way to break a fast than going for anything else. So we're just trying to decide that at the moment. Okay. I think I'm actually feeling great. My head feels less foggy.
I was going to say, because you don't know whether you're living with parasites or not, therefore if you do the cleanse, how do you know if you've got rid of the parasites that may or may not have been there?
Well, this is the big pull-out, you see, because I mean, I'm sure you might have seen one. Lots of people are now putting videos on this. Oh, this has come out, and they've actually got pictures of what's being passed.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
If you want, you can assist the cleanse by doing things like enemas, you know, once, twice a day. And then if you catch what comes out, you can see what's there.
I'm wow.
not going to go into detail, personal detail, but the one reason why I know this is working for me, and who knows if I have parasites, is that whenever I'm in conversation with people, sometimes I really forget what I'm talking about. I just feel tired. Bearing in mind, I'm getting more sleep now in the last month when my daughter's sleeping better, but I feel less foggy specifically in the last 3 days.
Okay,
and we started it on Sunday. You want to start a parasite cleanse around a full moon because that's when they're said to be the most active.
Gosh. Okay. Well, I'll be interested to see how you get on.
I'll let you know.
Okay. And enjoy the salad.
I can't wait for the salad. That's all I'm thinking about.
Oh, brilliant. We've got one more ad break to take.
Hannah Murray, TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the last part of today's Women Talk with Victoria Adams. We've done it, just the two of us.
I can't believe there's 10 minutes left. Some people must be thinking, oh, still 10 minutes to go.
this is what I said. It just should be easy. It's just us having a chat. It's great.
It does just feel like a chat. I do forget that there might be somebody listening. I've just talked about parasite cleanses.
Never mind. Wasn't on my list, but we made it work. I love it. Tangents are great. You were talking about sleep and getting more sleep. And interestingly, the next article is talking about sleep. This was an article that we discussed on Men Talk a few weeks ago, and I kept it because I thought it would be interesting to talk to women about it as well. Margaret Thatcher was famously said to get by on just 4 hours sleep a night when she ran the country. But while half of Britons often survive on the same amount, according to new research, unlike the former Prime Minister, a majority admit they don't get enough rest to function properly. Four in 10 also say they get under 3 hours sleep a night, impacting their lives at home and work. Wow. So how many hours do you get now and what did you get a few weeks ago?
I'm definitely getting 7 hours sleep now.
Okay.
Whereas before, I actually couldn't tell you. Like in the morning, I'd be like, how did you sleep? And neither of us would know.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was just so interrupted. But I don't think we realise how tired we actually are until we start catching up, until we start feeling better. You know, like, oh gosh, what I thought was normal was not normal. Like that was unwell. Like Margaret Thatcher, 4 hours sleep for however many years.
Mm.
That would have been taking its toll somewhere. And it took its toll on her family, right?
Yeah.
That was one thing that kind of had to be put at one side for a little while, according to I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here.
Which is obviously where we get all our news
our information.
From. Oh, funny. But yeah, it's I definitely can survive on a lot less sleep than I could do 10 years ago. And I remember people saying, oh, you know, when you get older, you need less sleep, you know, and famously teenagers will sleep for 10, 12 hours or whatever. And trying to wake them up in the morning can be difficult. But biologically, you know, there's things changing in their bodies. They do need more sleep. It's not about them being lazy. And our bodies do change, and hormones and things like that. And it is true, as we get older, whatever age that kind of happens, who determines what older is, but we do need less sleep. And I absolutely survive on 6-7 hours sleep a night.
But then later on, if you catch up and you have a lie in the next week or a month or a year later, do you suddenly feel the benefit or feel the difference of that little bit of extra sleep where you were deprived before?
Yeah.
Or it makes no difference?
Well, I mean, the thing is, when I did the breakfast show for 9 years and I was having less sleep then, I wasn't able to go to sleep any earlier. So I was going to sleep at about midnight and then setting my alarm for about 6:30 every morning, and my alarm woke me up every morning. If I didn't set my alarm, I would have slept through my show. I mean, literally, that alarm was getting me up. And everyone said to me when I started doing the afternoon show, oh, your body clock will probably automatically wake you up at 6:30.
I bet it didn't.
No,
did
it totally didn't.
No, it wouldn't have woken
me. I was sleeping
up
till 9, 9:30, quite easily. Quite easily. But now, over the course of the last year or so, like body clock, definitely I'm awake 8:00, 8:30 without an alarm. That's the time my body wakes up naturally.
I wouldn't, if I worked any kind of shift, I don't believe, I must have worked shift in the past to be saying this, I wouldn't have honoured the time frame. So our concierge guy, there's three of them and they work these 7 till 7 and then all through the night. And I said, do you even bother to sleep during the day? They're like, oh yeah. I know if I was working all night, I don't think I'd bother sleeping.
Really?
I think maybe I'd try and then I'd feel like this little nap was a bit of a waste of time because I'd be checking my phone or this, you know. No, I like to sleep in the dark, in night hours.
Yeah, I don't have a problem sleeping during the day when it's light at all. When I did the breakfast show and was doing about 6 hours sleep a night, I'd have a siesta most afternoons.
Yeah, I can't get my head around a siesta. My partner has a siesta because it took me a while. I was like, oh, you're not as tired as me through the night because you're having a siesta. I just can't get my head around it.
No.
It's like I see it as free time and I value the importance of sleep. But for some reason, I can't value the importance of my sleep enough to nap during the day.
But I mean, you can make the room dark so you can tell yourself that it's time to go for a sleep.
I think I'm using that as an excuse. Okay. I think my head is so overactive. I should do some meditation or something, shouldn't I? I should find a yoga teacher.
You should listen to your own advice.
But yeah, I can understand how people do function on 4 hours of sleep, but I think it's a shame that we have to on occasion.
Yeah, I know what you mean. There was an interesting piece. We've got under five minutes left. There was a piece talking about red lipstick and how it's got more and more popular over the years. Taylor Swift wears a lot of red lipstick and a lot of young people, 88% of women aged 18 to 35 claimed they have recently worn red lipstick. How do you feel about red lipstick?
I've tried red lipstick about 7 times in my life. And even from the age of 13, I just feel it makes me look older and old. I'm not a red lipstick wearer.
No, I want to be.
Same.
And I've got a couple of really nice red lipsticks of varying shades. And I do wear it every so often. And whenever I do, I look at myself in the mirror and I think it looks a bit weird. I don't think it suits me. And I see it on younger people like Taylor Swift.
They look amazing.
Just amazing. Amazing.
Do you think it's then because you're not used to it? Because I have tried. Like, you know, I'll go and buy the new red lipstick and then I was like, why have I just bothered wasting money on that? Because I put it on and there's no way I'm going to go out wearing it because I think I look weird.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I'm wearing a red dress now and I've worn red lipstick with this before because I, you know, match it to the outfit kind of thing. And yeah, I'll look in the mirror and be like, oh, that's that bit too much. It feels a bit too much.
I think you'd look amazing with red lipstick. So, because I actually had to look amazing. Over and I was like, oh, I wonder if she's got red lipstick on. And I hadn't noticed it, you know.
I thought about it.
I noticed it on me.
Yeah, I thought about it this morning and then I went, no, pink.
All right, well, maybe tomorrow. It's Friday. Maybe tomorrow's the day for the red lipstick.
Red lippy day.
Yeah. I know that it has to be lip lined and blended well to make it look right. And that's something that I'm not great with makeup.
No, I can't be bothered.
I can't be bothered to put it on and I can't be bothered to take it off properly.
Yeah, it's a lot of effort, isn't it? When you see all the different videos of the girls doing all the makeup and all the different stages and you realise how thick it is.
I can't get my head around how different people look pre-makeup and post-makeup when it is that thick. And it is like war paint, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Some of these girls on reality television and stuff, and you see them without makeup, you barely recognise them.
But I would love to be able to do it to my own face.
Awesome.
But it would just look weird.
Yeah. Well, I remember the only time in my life when I got my makeup done for me was for my wedding. And when she did the makeup trial, so she came along, so we made sure everything was okay. I think she was a little bit offended because I said, I feel like I look a bit like a drag queen. You
Is
know,
that
I,
what you said to her?
I think I did, yeah. But then as soon as I said, I went, oh, I don't mean that in a bad way. And I was realised that wasn't really helping. And I said, no, I'm sorry. I really don't mean it. It's just I'm not used to wearing so much makeup because most of the time I don't wear any makeup at all, especially working on the radio, one of the perks of the job. But sometimes it's just, you know, the odd bit of
Pick
eyeliner.
Or,
yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But certainly not layers and layers. I never wear foundation, for example.
Well, for me, foundation is just going to show up as a mark, you know, and it's going to be obvious. For me, I feel it's so obvious I've got something on that makeup should look seamless.
Yeah.
But they do say, especially for weddings, especially when you're going to be having photos taken, they do have to up the ante.
Yeah.
But then in real life, face to face, you feel like a weird drag queen.
Yeah. And also being on stage, to be fair, all the different plays and things I've done,
you have to
wear more makeup for that. Otherwise, you look washed out under the lights.
But I imagine that's moving so quickly. You haven't got time to look in the mirror and say,
no.
Oh, you know, you have to go with what you have to go with, right, on stage.
Yeah. And it somehow works because you've got the lights. Oh, we've got 39 seconds left. We could have talked through the news, you know, the news moment. Well, oh, goodness, the show's
kick them off the news. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. I'm so, so pleased and thankful that you came.
That I turned up.
Absolutely. Well done. We did it, just the two of us.
It's been a pleasure and thank you so much for having me on. Have a lovely afternoon.
Thank you. You too. And as I mentioned earlier, the book show is on tonight. Howard is next with Spain Today for an hour. And then I'm back with you for 2 hours with the book show. So don't miss that. Have a great weekend as well, and I'll be back on TRE in the afternoon next Monday.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.